In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, June 18th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hour number two on Friday always means the Federal News Countdown, and this week is no exception. And I have in studio with me this week an old friend and a new friend. And my old friend is Derek Dorch. Derek T. Dorch is the host of Fed Access on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and is president of the Diversa Group, a consulting firm that helps people looking for work in the federal government, looking to build careers in the federal government, and also a former Marine. And thank you for your service to our country, sir. Semper Fi to you. And glad to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me, Francis.
Your show is on every Friday, right?
That's
before my
noon.
Show.
Yeah,
at noon.
Exactly. And we had on the National Press, Colleen.
Colleen Kelly of the National Treasury Employees Union on the show today. So I got to enjoy that while I was setting up for In-Depth today. My new friend is John Kamensky, who is senior fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. And you're new to the countdown, but your colleague Jonathan Brule's been on a number of times. So I imagine he's warned you about how foolish we can become.
Oh, absolutely. He said this is great fun.
Well, I appreciate you being in here today, and I hope it is not the last time. I hope we don't scare you off today, especially Dorch, because he's okay. All right, so we've got three news stories that each of you have chosen as what you consider to be the most important federal news stories of the week. This is how we do it on the Federal News Countdown, and of course we start with
number three.
The third most important news story of the week, according to Derek Dorch, is from GovExec in the headline, actually Congress Daily in the headline, Homeland Security Officials Weigh More UAV Border Patrols. Homeland Security Department seriously considering expanding its arsenal of unmanned drones to patrol the nation's borders and does not expect to have a comprehensive border security assessment completed until the end of the year, according to a senior DHS official. What jumped out at you on this story, Derek?
Well, you know, they've been trying to put this SBI net on the border in terms of these kind of, you know, manned cameras and these computer cameras, or not unmanned cameras, I should say, all across the border, electronic devices that would trigger people if they cross the border. It hasn't turned out what they thought it was going to be. It's been an expensive project. It hasn't been as successful as they thought it was going to be. What we are seeing with the, you know, UAVs, these unmanned aerial vehicles, is that they've been proven successful in the war zone.
Mm-hmm.
We even have I know LAPD is using UAVs right now. We even have police units using UAVs. So in this process, I'm thinking it's a cost saving measure. It's going to be more effective because you can put UAVs roaming the skies 24 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
They're unmanned. There's no pilot required.
Right.
And they can kind of just scan this whole border in terms of the electronics and the devices that they have to, you know, detect if somebody's trying to cross over.
I may be exposing my ignorance as a non-military person, okay, but my stereotype of an unmanned drone flying in, say, Afghanistan is if it sees a bad guy, it blows it up.
Well,
and we certainly don't want that happening on the border.
We don't want that.
Do I have it wrong?
Well, in terms of the more of a homeland security scenario, we're talking about probably unarmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about more surveillance type scenario who will identify a target, put a grid down, and kind of say this is where they are on the map.
Gotcha.
And then they'll send maybe a border patrol team to try to apprehend those people. So I'm thinking it's going to be an unarmed scenario, but this is to me more cost effective than what the SBI net.
So we're directing resources in the form of teams to be able to go and say, and as you said, lay coordinates on a grid and say, we know you're going to find something here if you go there, instead of just having scanning. Okay.
And a UAV can circle around that area and also maintain eyesight on who the person is.
The government essentially, this story says from Congress Daily, does not know if it should be pursuing SBI net, even though more than $1 billion has been spent on the program to date, said Randolph Height, GAO's Director of Information Technology, Architecture, and Systems Issues. The department shrunk its goals and requirements for SBINet, but GAO doesn't have confidence that even those will be achieved, Height said. And if the GAO puts that kind of a scenario, it paints the picture in that way, that's usually not a good sign for success later
and
on.
We're just spending money, and it's not really providing us a good solution.
Mm-hmm.
This is more of a good solution with the UAVs, Roman. We already see there's a proven solution in a war zone already.
All right. Great information from the Chris Strom story in Congress Daily. Derek Dorch's choice as the third most important federal news story of the week under the headline, Homeland Security Officials Weigh More UAV Border Patrols.
John, your story number three on the countdown this week is headline, House Passes Government Efficiency and Performance Legislation. This is actually a press release from the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Talk about this, the passage of this bill and what it means and maybe where it's headed from here.
Sure. This bill is an amendment to the existing Government Performance and Results Act that was passed back in 1993 and largely hasn't been amended since.
Mm-hmm.
And the Government Performance and Results Act does three things. It requires agencies to develop a strategic plan for a 3 to 5 year period. The second thing it does is it requires agencies to develop an annual plan, an increment of their 3 to 5 year strategic plan. And then at the end of the year, how well did they do against their plan and have to do a report? The concern over the years is while agencies have done that, this information hasn't been really used much to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Bush administration created something called the Program Assessment Review Tool, which was to review each program and score it as to how well it's performing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done on 1,000 programs and was published. And that was not seen as being, you know, something that drove performance. It clearly made things a lot more visible, but it didn't drive performance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Congressman Henry Cuellar, a Democrat from Texas who used to be in the Texas legislature and a reformer in the Texas state government, co-sponsored with Congressman Dennis Moore from Kansas, a piece of legislation that would try to move this forward. And so what they did is they sponsored some legislation to parallel what the Obama administration is doing, which is have each agency head identify high-priority goals. And this administration, they've done that administratively, and they've identified 128 across the 24 major agencies. This legislation would then link senior executive performance ratings to how well those goals are being met,
mm-hmm.
and require that agency heads have quarterly reviews of the progress against these 128 goals and then post these performance assessments on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing this legislation would do is that it would require that the administratively created performance improvement officers in each agency and the government-wide performance improvement council be made statutory on par with, say, the CFO council, the CIO council, the human capital officers council. So it gives them some statutory authority. The interesting thing is that this was legislation that he brought up last year. It was brought up again this year. The House passed it this week unanimously, through unanimous consent, and it now goes over to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
The question is it goes to Senator Lieberman's committee in the Senate. The question is there interest on the Senate side? I know that Senator Mark Warner, who is leading a government performance task force in the Budget Committee, mm-hmm. has expressed some interest in something like this, because when he was governor, he had a strong emphasis of connecting plans to actual performance in his state government. And so I think that he may, in the Senate side, be the one that may carry the torch in terms of moving this forward.
I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball for me, and something that's kind of unrelated. But you mentioned the name of Senator Warner, not currently a member of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee,
right.
I don't believe.
Right.
But if you shine up your crystal ball and look in there at who might become a successor on his side of the aisle to Senator Akaka, who leads the subcommittee that deals with a lot of federal issues, especially workforce mm-hmm. issues, could Senator Warner be the guy?
I don't know. I don't know what his interests are in that area. I know that, for example, Senator Carper is the one that had jurisdiction over this particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Senator Warner probably has a much bigger picture other than just, you know, government performance.
Understood.
But it's much more government outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Budget Committee role that he has, that may be a better fit for him
long term. Yeah, Senator Carper on the show on Wednesday on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You can listen to him telling me about the new cybersecurity legislation that he co-sponsored along with Senator Lieberman and Senator Collins, and also talking about the federal response to the BP oil spill. All of that on Federal News Radio 1500 AM on In Depth with Francis Rose. It's the Federal News Countdown. John Kaminsky's story number three, headline, House passes government efficiency and performance legislation. Details on that bill from the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And you can read all of the stories that we're counting down later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back to get into story number two for John Kaminsky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Federal News Radio's Derek Dorr when we continue on In Depth on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Human Capital Solutions Report provided by Aon Consulting.
Aon Consulting has brought hiring into the 21st century with its realistic job previews, or RJPs. An RJP gives candidates an unbiased look at the job responsibilities, the good, bad, and everything in between, and comes customized to fit an agency's needs, from a straightforward brochure to a web-based multimedia demonstration. RJPs lead to a stronger pool of applicants, a more efficient hiring process, and significant cost savings through decreased turnover.
Aon Consulting partners with leading employers worldwide to turn strategies into success. With its vast federal and commercial experience, Aon Consulting provides solutions and best practices to help your agency be more efficient, improve delivery, and achieve its goals. With new leadership and new missions, federal agencies need support now more than ever. By engaging its national network of unmatched talent, innovation, and operational excellence, Aon Consulting delivers distinct value to its clients.
To learn more, visit aonfederal.com. That's aonfederal.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. Music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
Here's David McClure, Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Communications, GSA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by SafeNet.
A cloud environment is an application-rich environment. I think we're going to see the rejuvenation of applications in the technology area. We have been so heavily focused on technology, we're now able to focus on information and data.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
From defending our nation's borders to protecting the environment, cloud computing services can support your mission and serve the American public. Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows agencies to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle, from the battle space to the White House. SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabek. Here's what we're working on for the Friday edition of the Dorabek Insider, the web. This afternoon, we're going to talk to the person who invented the web, Tim Berners-Lee. Today, he's interested in helping you. We're going to talk to him about the creation of the web and the power of open data. And imagine biking all the way across the country. We're going to talk to a government contractor who's doing just that to raise awareness for lung disease. All that and more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabek Insider. It's only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and I'm happy to have John Kamensky from the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Derek T. Dorch of Diversa Group and also the host of Fed Access here on Federal News Radio as my guests on the Federal News Countdown this week. And we're up to
number two.
The number two story of the week, the second most important federal news story of the week, according to John Kamensky, is from federalnewsradio.com. Jason Miller's story headlined, OMB Preparing Performance Management Dashboard. And dashboard, John, is becoming, in my view, kind of like cloud computing and transparency. It's turning into one of these buzzwords. And when I saw Jason's story, the first thing I wondered was, what is the point of saturation of dashboards when we have so many dashboards that it doesn't become any different than, for example, one of the complaints about PART was, well, we just have this list that we have to check off. When does complying with all the dashboard stuff become kind of a similar exercise, if ever, do you think?
Well, in the last administration, the catchphrase was scorecards.
Right.
And this one is dashboards. Mm-hmm. So scorecards implies a win-lose. Dashboard is sort of like more progress.
Yeah.
So I think that the shift in the language, the symbolism of it, is appropriate. This is being driven in large part by Jeff Zients' deputy, Shelley Metzenbaum,
mm-hmm.
who has followed the performance management arena for years. She's done several reports for the IBM Center. In fact, what I thought was kind of interesting was the report that she did for us a couple years ago was, here's what the new administration should do. And I think that was why they hired us.
They got her the gig.
Go try to do this.
Yeah.
But what it's trying to do is, as I mentioned in the earlier segment, is that the administration's identified these 128 goals. The agencies have identified them. And they've identified goal leaders. And now what they are doing is they're having quarterly progress meetings, and one of them is going to be next month, where they begin meeting with 128 by agency
mm-hmm.
to find out what the kind of progress is. But what they wanted to be able to do, much like PART, is to share this progress publicly, this transparency notion.
Sure.
And so what they want to do is create something called a performance portal, a performance dashboard.
Something easy for people to read and people like the layperson
yes.
to read it.
And what Shelley is saying is that the idea is to use it, and which, as she's saying, we're trying to move from a system less focused on planning and reporting and more to a system focused on use. And what she wants to do is use performance information to, as she says, lead, learn, and leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the administration's 2011 budget proposals around management, they have initiatives around LEAD, which is 128 goals, the whole thing around LEARN, which is the scorecard so that people can come together and
right.
talk. It's not the scorecard or the dashboard so much as the interaction that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And then the leverage, which is how do they begin creating what they're calling problem-solving networks that reach across government agencies to come together and actually help address some of these things. There's a lot of stuff, more sophistication actually going on behind this notion of a dashboard than just a compliance exercise.
The thing about this story that I thought was the most interesting is it looks at this in kind of a different way. It's the last two paragraphs in the story. Jason Miller writes that Metzenbaum says, similar to what Labor did, and it cites a Labor Department example earlier in the story, OMB is looking at cross-agency priorities such as veterans homelessness or healthcare reform, and Shelley Metzenbaum says we're putting in place a process where we start moving on these issues. We can't do them all, so we'll set priorities. But the concept that you would be measuring, my understanding of PART always was it went to an agency and said, we're going to look at this program and measure this program. But if you're doing a homelessness program that involves vets at HHS, and VA has a program that also works with veterans homelessness, maybe you're getting a good result here and needing more help over here, but those aren't necessarily talking to each other. They might be in silos, where this sounds like it's trying to, yeah. at least trying mm-hmm. to break out of that.
Well,
do I have that right?
Yes, because one of the things about the 128 goals is OMB encouraged agencies to come up with joint goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, on the homeless veterans, The goal is to reduce the number of homeless veterans by 59,000 over the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. And it's a joint goal of both VA and HUD. Mm-hmm. And they've got some HHS folks. But the idea is they're in it together as a team. So it's not my programs versus your programs, but our programs. Right. Mm-hmm. And how do we work collectively?
Yeah.
What's interesting is that this was piloted or used in several other arenas. If you look at the United Kingdom, the cabinet there under Tony Blair had something called an implementation unit. And they would work together on how to get something done. It's not policy making, but actually they call it actually the delivery unit. In Australia, they call it an implementation unit.
Mm-hmm.
In Maryland, the Governor O'Malley has something called State Stat.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's models out there of how do you bring people together around achieving a common outcome and sort through what strategies work, which ones don't, what do we need to change and
now,
stuff like
do
that.
Do you see that this model in terms of using this dashboard or this model, does it help agencies in terms of the motivation of the employees where they see this dashboard, they see, you know, how they're being held accountable? I mean, does it provide? Because really, it's going to be the people who are in these agencies who are the implementers who are going to make this stuff happen.
In the Bush administration, Clay Johnson, who's the deputy director for management in charge of the red, green, and yellow scorecards, mm-hmm. has said humiliation works. And in this administration, what they're saying is when we have a common operating picture where we all understand the data, we can each share and learn together. Right. And how do we make progress? And so the idea of the dashboard isn't so much accountability. I mean, it is, but the emphasis is on learning. Sure. And so it's how do we learn and see things together that we can move forward on?
We've got to take a break, but one last question to get out on. Do you think philosophically we do a good enough job in the United States, federal government, at looking at examples at the state and local level or looking at examples of governments in other countries, whether it's for this kind of thing or just for performance in general? Do we take advantage of the body of knowledge that's out there already, do you think? Well
no.
enough?
No.
That's pretty definitive. John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. You should come back sometime and we should talk about that very issue because I think that's really interesting. Chris Dorabek has talked about that a number of times on his show on the Dorabek Insider, which is 3 to 7 every afternoon on this station. And I agree with you that there are a lot of models out there that we could look at. John Kamensky's story number 2 on the Federal News Countdown this week is headlined OMB Preparing Performance Management Dashboard. You can find that and all of our countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back for Derek Dorch's story number 2 when the Federal News Countdown continues on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from June 17th, 2010. The G fund is unchanged at $13.31, a gain of 0.05 for the F fund at $13.93. The C fund rises 0.02 at $13.35. The S fund loses 0.03 at $17.80, a gain of 0.04 for the I fund at $16.90. We have some gains for your L funds. The 2040 is up 0.02 at $15.70. The 2030 rises 0.02 at $15.55. A gain of 0.01 for the 2020 at $15.42. The 2010 also rises 0.01 at $15.44. And the L income picks up 0.01 at $14.08. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
The National Endowment for the Arts is moving to a new grants management system. Mike Burke is the Chief Information Officer of the NEA and explains his strategy.
The lead for this partnership is the National Endowment for the Humanities. They have a system that very much meets our needs, and so with minor modifications, we'll be transferring our data over to their system and then using that, probably starting the early part of next year.
Data is exploding in growth, usage, and retention. Count on it. And count on Vion to manage your organization through that change. Vion's file service solutions allow you to manage all platforms with an integrated management approach. This enables you to consolidate, protect, search, and archive unstructured data. With powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion will help you regain control of your IT environment. To learn more about Vion's file services, visit Vion.com. That's Vion.com.
What about the Obama administration's open government directive? How does embracing new technology foster an open government agenda? What is the U.S. General Services Administration doing to be more transparent, collaborative, and accountable? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored by Dr. David McClure, Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Communications at the General Services Administration. Next week, join host Michael Keegan on the next edition of the Business of Government Hour.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses. Like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments. Not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Schizophrenic is how Defense Secretary Robert Gates describes Russia's relationship with Iran. In remarks before Congress, he indicated Russia knows that nukes in Iran would destabilize the region. Still, Russia is pursuing a commercial relationship with Iran. Gates told the Senate Armed Services Committee he was told by his counterpart in Russia while he was head of the CIA that supporting Iran's nuclear reactor was all about the money. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the number of frequent flyer miles you could earn for a flight that's nearly 30,000 miles long? Airink can. Airink supported the U.S. Air Force's C-5 aircraft modernization program by leading a test flight that flew through the Arctic cold in Alaska to the desert heat in Australia. The C-5 is 40 years old and is one of the largest aircraft in the world. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Join Input, the Authority on Government Business, June 24th at the Fairview Park Marriott for an executive breakfast featuring David McClure, Associate Administrator, Office of Citizen Services and Communications for the GSA. McClure will highlight new technology opportunities for GSA and ways to improve cloud computing standards and initiatives. Denise Peterson, Manager, Industry Analysis for Input, will also discuss the GSA topic as well as government-wide cloud computing trends. To register, contact Input Events at 703-707-3600.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. And the story number two this week, as chosen by Derek Dorch of Diversa Group and also the host of Fed Access on Federal News Radio, is from GovExec. And the headline is, Senate deals another blow to efforts to freeze federal pay. Now, this, I think, is significant, Derek, because as you and John Kaminsky and I were talking about in the previous segment with what's going on at state and local levels, there are a lot of state and local governments that where either an executive or like a county council or city council has a lot more autonomy, where these are just becoming, they're coming real rapid fire, exactly. Pay freezes or even pay cuts, layoffs and so on. And it looks like we're going to dodge that bullet because this is a 57-41 vote, according to Elizabeth Newell's story, to let stand a budgetary point of order against a GOP alternative amendment to the American Jobs and Closing Tax Loopholes Act that was brought by Senator John Thune of South Dakota. So when do we get to the point, if ever, where we can say, okay, we're probably not going to see a pay freeze this year? Is there a line there that you think we might be able to draw?
Well, you know, that USA Today, I don't know if you remember this, and Will, if you remember this, when USA Today ran this story about federal salaries.
And that was, a couple of weeks ago?
Well, that was probably a few months ago.
Oh, okay.
It became real big news about kind of high federal salaries and everything else. And, you know, at Fox News and everybody else start saying, oh, federal government workers are getting paid, you know, so much more and everything else. What my concern of it is that federal workers, especially those who are doing, you know, the diligent jobs out there, none of their salaries for the most part are going to ever necessarily equal out in the private sector. There are some salaries that are equivalent to private sector in terms of people who are running full agencies and stuff like that. You know, they're doing a diligent job working, you know, 20 hours a day and doing some amazing stuff if they're right running the right agency. I think that this is going to always be an issue because pay is always an issue in terms of, you know, how can we cut the budget of federal government? And in this amendment, they were also saying that they want to, you know, keep the number of government workers at a cap. So saying we're not going to have any additional hiring, where this administration is saying, you know, based on our national security interests, on our international affairs interests, on what we're seeing in the Gulf of Mexico, there's going to be a whole bunch of there. You know, Secretary Gates wants to insource, you know, people on the government contracting side. There's going to be a good amount of government hiring up to at least 2012 mm-hmm. in terms of the number of people we're going to hire. I talked to people from U.S. Marshals. They're going to be bringing in 700 people. I talked to people from different agencies who said we're bringing in 100, 700, or thousands of people. The budget for FBI says 813 people mm-hmm. for next year. So in this dynamic, but the needs of government are so high in terms of, you know, intelligence, cybersecurity, with this, you know, protection of the environment and everything else, you can't just, you know, dish it out to contractors, and you also have to pay these people the right amount of money to do this hard work. So to me, this is going to always be an issue. We may see it every year because mm-hmm. I think somebody in the Senate or in the House is going to always propose it. I think it's unfortunate because what we end up expecting is that we end up, you know, saying that government needs to do all this work, and then we beat them down and yeah. say, well, you don't need to get paid. You don't need to get these pay increases. And I think it's kind of one of those catch-22s that sometimes harms the morale of some government workers.
What's the implication for this, John? It's this kind of thing gets talked about at the same time, performance, performance, performance. You have to improve performance, or we're going to judge your pay. I mean, John Barry's already talked about getting rid of the whole GS schedule and implementing some form of performance-based pay across the whole government. And now there are people out there and getting louder and louder, no pay raise anyway, even if you do a good job.
Well, I'm finding it interesting, having had most of my career in the government and then coming to the private sector, that this kind of conversation, for the most part, just doesn't happen. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember one year when IBM did not have a very good first quarter, and, you know, the annual equivalent to cost of living, just, we're not doing that this year.
Yeah.
And that was just an email,
mm-hmm.
and there was no protest, there was no hearings, there was no, you know, it just was like, that's the way things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of what's going on here in the federal government, there's the annual cost of living, and then there is the step increase.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people in the British government, is you get both.
Yeah.
So, if you go back to 1944, that was the last time our country's deficit hit 100% of GDP, and that's what's going to happen in 2 years here.
Mm-hmm.
So this notion of that if everything – that you can't say things aren't going to go on the table, that there's going to have to – and that Gates – for the first time says, I'm not going to say no to automatically to a pay freeze in the military. So
mm-hmm.
I think that the dynamic that's happening is it's that we can't say this won't happen, but it's something that's never been talked about before seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is the dynamic going to happen? And that's kind of getting into the next phase. So
I think what you're getting at, though, is what's driving the sentiment of the average person, what I call the mom test, because of my mom, who is completely separated from Washington, doesn't have any interest in politics, doesn't pay a lot of attention to what the federal government does, but is concerned about whether things work well or not, you know, is aware of what's going on in the Gulf and that kind of thing. And that's the concern, I think, of people like her and a lot of people out there who aren't connected to Washington, which is, at why isn't something like this on the table? And especially when they see it happening in their at the school board level, where school boards are talking about, we don't want to cut out pay increases for teachers, but we might have to because there's just no money.
Right.
There just isn't enough money. And that's another issue that I'm seeing is that I think people at agencies are understanding that the discussion is, do we have the money or not, rather than do we want to do this or not? When it comes to policy. Well,
especially if you say you're going to have a freeze mm-hmm. in spending and civilian agencies, well, that means the cost of living has to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that it would then be coming from programs. And so then the question then becomes, is at what point are agencies willing to make that kind of a trade-off? And
yeah.
where does that conversation happen? Does that happen at the agency level? Or does it happen in Congress? I would have said it, see, even 6 months ago, this is something that is just an academic exercise, and I don't think it is anymore.
I think government workers are, I agree. I think government workers are used to kind of saying, hey, listen, this is what I get paid. I think what the concern of it is, and you can use the military, for example, is where you have, when I was in the military, in terms of pay against maybe a government, a person who's we talk about kind of the Blackwater scenario,
yeah.
where someone who is on the front line mm-hmm. and your pay is nowhere near, someone who is out there as a contractor. They're getting, hundreds, more than what you're getting,
yeah.
but you're doing, your life is on the line just as somebody else. I think the concern of it is that when does federal pay really become equivalent to other people who are doing things in other sectors that are either just as dangerous or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be on the table. I don't think people should get bonuses if they're not doing a good job.
All right. I get the last word on this one, and that is the shame of it is that the people do have the option to not work for the federal government. They're not bound and determined to stay there. And the fear is that they'll take us up on that and leave government service, and we'll have even more of a talent attrition than we already do. Derek Dortch's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is headlined, Senate Deals Another Blow to Efforts to Freeze Federal Pay. It's from GovExec by Elizabeth Newell, and you can find it later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We are all the way up to number one from John Kaminsky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Derek Dortch of the Diversa Group and the Fed Access Radio Show on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll get into story number one from each of them when we return on the Federal News Countdown.
Deloitte invites you to join Debriefs, a series of 60-minute webcasts focused on topics of interest to federal and state government executives. Debriefs webcasts feature their professionals discussing critical issues that affect your organization. For more information and to register, visit Deloitte.com/US/debriefs. That's visit Deloitte.com/US/debriefs.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Department of Homeland Security officials say 100% of passengers traveling in the U.S. and territories are now being checked against terrorist watch lists through the Transportation Security Administration's Secure Flight Program, a major step in fulfilling a key 9/11 Commission recommendation. Secure Flight enables TSA to screen passengers directly against government watch lists, using passengers' names, their date of birth, and gender before a boarding pass is issued. In addition to providing secure travel for passengers, the program helps prevent the misidentification of passengers who have names similar to individuals on government watch lists. Officials say 99% of passengers will be cleared by Secure Flight to print boarding passes at home by providing their date of birth, gender, and name as it appears on the government ID they plan to use when traveling.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck.
Is there a better way to craft federal regulations? The Transportation Department has teamed up with Cornell Law School. Cynthia Farlan is a principal researcher on the Cornell e-rulemaking initiative.
We did their rulemaking on banning texting in commercial motor vehicles, and we opened on their second airline passenger rights rulemaking. So that is open now. We're getting a lot of activity.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/DorabeckInsider.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and we have reached the pinnacle of the chart this week.
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Derek Dortch, is headlined Diversity and Student Hiring, next on OPM's list. It is the issue of the hiring practice of the government. It's from GovExec, and it was also the subject of your show right on that was on right before the in-depth program today. You had Colleen Kelly from NTU talking about this very subject. She and her colleagues at the unions aren't happy about the intern program. But what's the thumbnail of this that John Barry's talking about?
Well, there's going to be, you know, with the whole hiring reform, and when they had the press release and they had the whole kind of big, you know, hoorah about hiring reform, and the president signed the executive order, they're talking about what's next on the list is about looking at kind of student hiring, what kind of programs. There is a program called the Federal Career Internship Program. There are STEP-type programs. They want to look at all these kind of programs and kind of see, are they being effective enough? Are agencies using them effectively? Are agencies misusing them? And that's what Colleen was talking about there's a feeling that agencies are misusing what is called an internship program that may have brought in either graduate students or whoever the case is, and it's being used as a hiring program so that takes people out of the competitive process. So that's a concern. So John Barry has a team who's going to be looking at all these different kind of student hiring programs and seeing what's the best way to go about this. You mentioned something we were talking about over the break about the whole veterans preference.
Yeah.
That's in the dynamic of diversity and special emphasis programs, or what they call selective placement programs or anything like that. We were talking about, do veterans get more preference and hiring managers be
undue
concerned?
Undue
preference and saying, listen, you may not be as qualified in terms of your experience, but because you're a veteran, you get, 5, 10 points or how many ever points. And I'm a veteran myself. I think veterans preference is good, but I do agree that there are sometimes people who are qualified are pushed out of a process because they don't have a number of points. This is going to be addressed, and this has been addressed to a degree with the new hiring reform, with this executive order, and moving things from the rule of three, what used to be kind of what they call the rule of three hiring, where you had to take the top three people at the top three scores and take them, which meant if you just had veterans on there, they would probably get an addition to 95 points. If me and you got 95 points and I add on a 10, I'm going to automatically beat you out.
Yeah.
And so now it's going to go to category rating hiring, in which you can take a list of everyone who met highly qualified candidate and anyone who's in that list. Then the hiring manager can choose from that list of candidates. So we may kind of see and it doesn't mean that veterans preference is not going to be used. It's going to be used to get you into that highly qualified list, but it doesn't guarantee you the job.
John, the management element of this that I think is interesting is partly political, and that is the president and the people that the president has appointed have shown a perfect willingness to do things when it comes to HR issues that are exactly at odds with some of their core constituencies. I can't imagine. Now, President Obama got a lot of support from labor unions in the primary contest against then Senator Clinton, and of course in the general election had just about every union behind him. But he's done a lot of things like this idea of, as we talked about earlier, getting rid of the general schedule, the internship program, done a lot of things that unions don't like. And that federal employees in groups don't particularly care for. What do you think that says about his style managerially? Anything?
Well, he has done a lot of things for the unions as well. He's created he reinstituted the executive order of labor management partnerships. He has basically stood behind the dismantling of the pay for performance system at both Homeland Security and Defense. So there are, it's not all, simply a one sided thing. I think that they're looking at these as what is good management or what are the priorities that we need to be setting. And it's not like we're only going to go one way or the other. I think that there's, the intention of we're going to manage intelligently.
A diversity of viewpoints, I guess you could say, right?
And I think, I do think this is important. I do think that this is, and they're taking the right approach with the hiring reform and also looking at diverse candidates, because we do, as we look at our homeland security issues, or our defense issues and our intelligence capacity, we do need to bring in diverse candidates who have language abilities, who may be naturalized citizens, who have a wide range of experiences, that they can bring to the table. So I think all of this kind of stuff in terms of looking at diversity programs and new hiring programs, new student programs, is a critical thing.
Diversity and student hiring next on OPM's list. The GovExec story is the number one most important federal news story of the week as chosen by Derek Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose. Back to talk about John Kamensky's story number one of the week when we continue on the Federal News Countdown.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
You've heard of continuous network monitoring, but of what? Here's Matt Koos from the National Cybersecurity Division of DHS.
Four primary areas. It's inventory management, configuration management, and vulnerability and patch management. So those four areas, I think people do them to different varying degrees today. The standards are mature now. Those four areas, I think you'll see a drastic improvement. And that's really the focus of our continuous monitoring stuff for net for FY10.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355 or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
Here's Colonel Kevin Foster, Office of the Secretary of Defense, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by SafeNet.
For DOD to have a cloud computing environment that perpetuates a real-time information sharing environment that's flexible, agile, secure, have single sign-on, a standardized CNA.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
From defending our nation's borders to protecting the environment, cloud computing services can support your mission and serve the American public. Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows agencies to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for June is the International Association of Firefighters Burn Foundation. Summer's at hand, and with it the danger of burns from cookouts and campfires. The IAFF Burn Foundation is dedicated to preventing burns and helping burn survivors. Visit station partners at federalnewsradio.com for 10 helpful tips on preventing burns and more information about the Burn Foundation. And while you're there, you can join the cause and help burn survivors. Community Spotlight is brought to you by Ackerman Security Systems.
We're back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and as we wind down, of course, we are at number one, and the top story of the week is chosen by John Kamensky of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. It is a Federal Times story with the headline, 2012 Federal Budget Seeks $75 billion in Savings. The Obama administration last week directed agencies to prepare as much as $75 billion worth of discretionary budget cuts for 2012. To achieve the cuts, the Office of Management and Budget said agencies will, and then the Fed Times story provides a checklist of one, two, three, four, seven items there. And the writer of the story writes, then, that's easier said than done. And I imagine, John, that you concur with that pretty well, that doing this will be a lot more challenging than talking about it.
Well, I mean, this is important to put in some context. In 2010, Obama administration proposed a budget of $17 billion in cuts. And then last year in 2011 budget, they had $23 billion. So that they're jumping to 75.
And tripling it in 1 year.
This is really a different dynamic. And while there's seven here, there's really about a dozen things. In the past three or four weeks
mm-hmm.
that have been announced by the administration, that it just seems to be the steady drumbeat of places to look. Now, one of them is that is in the article is shedding excess properties. So there's 55,000 underused buildings and something like 10,000 that are abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them in the Defense Department, they're saying that's $3 billion that you can probably pick up there. This notion of improving productivity through using more IT, and the example they've got, for example, is the IRS was able to reduce their cost of processing tax forms by a third by moving to electronic tax forms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this could be done, and there's another 10,000 forms that the federal government does. You can streamline operations by consolidating expensive data centers. In IBM, we went from 128 to 12. For the Defense Department, went from about 500 – or no, the federal government went from about 538 to 1,100.
Mm-hmm.
So they were going the wrong direction, the industry guys.
Yeah.
Cut or reduce programs contributing little to their agency's missions. One of the things that OMB Director Orszag said is just identify. You don't have to put them on a list or do anything about it. Identify what you think are the 5% in terms of dollars of your lowest priority programs that you feel contribute the least to your agency's mission.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that kind of identification has ever been done. And then reducing improper payments of $20 billion. And today, the president and the vice president announced that not only are we going to try to reduce it, we're also going to focus on companies that aren't paying their taxes and other things, and we're going to quit giving them grants and quit giving them contracts and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
From the shameless plug department, that conversation Vice President Biden and Peter Orszag, the OMB director, talking about it, as you said, and we'll have that presentation on the program on Monday on In Depth with Francis Rose to hear about that. What's the impact, though? There are a lot of people who are saying, yeah, $75 billion, a lot of money. As a total percentage of the budget, though, not really that big an amount, and is this just trimming around the edges, or is this pretty substantive, do you think?
It's beginning. What you need to be able to do is to do big cuts or to do tax increases is to show that you're actually serious and you can get things done on the smaller stuff. So if you can say $100 billion a year for a period of years, and 100, right. you know, 75 or, you know, up to 100. And if you look at Gates, Gates says for over the next 5 years, we're going to trim $100 billion out of administrative costs. He says 43% of the defense budget is in overhead and administrative deficits, right. not supporting direct mission. And we can take that, and we're going to move that over to mission and to resupply stuff. So this whole notion of rethinking and really squeezing back and reprioritizing seems to be, just in the past 4 or 5 weeks,
mm-hmm.
a fairly major theme with a steady drumbeat.
Well, the tricky part is, if they cut $75 billion in 2012, they're going to have to figure out how to do it again in 2013 or keep it going.
Yeah.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Gentlemen, a terrific Federal News Countdown this week. Thank you very much for doing it.
Thank you for having us
on. Happy to do it.
Yes,
Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, John Kaminsky, the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Another Federal News Countdown next Friday, and back with a brand new in-depth program Monday at 1, including the event I just told you about with Vice President Biden and Peter Orszag. The Dorbeck Insider is up next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.